It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Here's pitch to Cal. Pitch swung on, driven straight away center field and deep. Giving ground, Cave. Look it up. Bye-bye. Big Cal with a two-run homer, and the Mariners have a 9-2 lead here in Colorado. Cal with home run number 5, RBIs 9 and 10. He drove that baby about 430.
Woo! Cal Raleigh going yard. His fifth home run of the season, just outside of the top 10 in the American League. And he helped lead the Mariners to a Game 2 doubleheader win over the Rockies. Mariners taking that series, beating Colorado 7-0 in a wintry Game 1, and then splitting the doubleheader on Day 2, losing 2-1 on a walk-off in extras. But then coming back a 10-2 win, so the Mariners have won two series in a row. In fact, they've won 7 of their past 10. It's been the starting pitching that's made the difference. So the pitching in general has been outstanding. A 1.48 ERA in these last 10 games. 96 strikeouts in 91 innings. Just 16 walks in that frame. They have been great on the mound. And now they'll certainly be tested as they'll face the Texas Rangers starting tonight. The Mariners and Rangers squaring off for the very first time. The Rangers, the defending World Series champions, and doing things well that you would expect them to do well. Offensively, 8th in WRC plus so far this season as a team. Top 10 in on-base percentage. Marcus Semien's off to a great start. Garcia has been sensational early in the season. 6 home runs. His slash has been pretty ridiculous. So offensively, they've been excellent so far this season, which is what you'd expect. On the mound, it's been a little different story. ERA 22nd in baseball. Their walk rate is one of the worst in the game. The hard hit rate is one of the worst in the game. So on the mound has been a different story, which kind of expected coming into this season, just in terms of bullpen was a struggle last year, until the playoffs, of course, and the rotation with the injuries as well. So they do have some question marks on the mound. And we'll see if the Mariners can take advantage of that in this 3-game series. You have to love how it lines up for the Mariners on the mound. Logan Gilbert will get the ball in Game 1 tonight. Dane Dunning will go for Texas in Game 1 of the series. 5:05 first pitch from Texas for Game 1 of the series. Game 2, also a 5:05 first pitch. This one lines up pretty well. Bryce Miller goes in Game 2. John Gray will get the ball for the Rangers in Game 2. By the way, we'll talk more about Bryce Miller coming up as we move through this pod today. And then wrapping up things on Thursday, Day Baseball Game 3 of the series. That's an 11:35 first pitch. Luis Castillo, Andrew Heaney will go at it in Game 3. So it's a really fun April series. The Mariners in Texas for the very first time. So we'll see what happens the next few days. Oh, speaking of this series, so Aaron and I are going to record another pod coming up, hopefully today, maybe tomorrow, but we'll be taking your questions in the pod. So you can always tweet us at Gary Hill Jr., at Hey Goldie, or send us an email, marinerspod@mariners.com. Questions about anything, baseball, the Mariners start, road trips, whatever. Send them along. Me and Aaron will answer your questions coming up, and that pod should be posted maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. So we'll see how it plays out. But this is going to be a really fun Texas Rangers series. So we'll see what happens, and we'll talk all about it later this week. In the meantime, we're going to break down Bryce Miller's start. We're going to start, though, with a conversation with Skyler Shebiyama. This is a really fun one. Hopefully you enjoy it.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
Welcome back to Trident Talk in front of the Mariners and Rockies. Doubleheader today, the final two games of this series before the Mariners move on to take on the Texas Rangers. We recently had a chance to catch up with Skyler Shebiyama.
Skyler, it's wonderful to be with you. You're a hard guy to track down in the heart of the season. I feel like right now, before things are really at warp speed, this is prime Skyler Shebiyama time. Am I assessing your life correctly?
You know, I think even even in spring, things are really busy. So it kind of starts, you know, in February. Postseason until February, that's where I'm really on the, you know, the IM courts, the various sports. But once February rolls in, it's tough. So this is, I'm actually cresting down.
Yeah,
I'm,
Gary, like,
I'm looking forward
Gary,
to...
Gary, that's Skylar's way of saying you should thank me for being here.
Yes. And we should.
And we should. We should. So we'll reset frequently throughout this conversation. Skylar, I think you are the most important and influential person within the Mariners organization that no one has any idea about.
I knew you were going to finish with that little applause.
Yes, yes.
You could just stop it there. Like, you don't have to say that.
It's like Skylar, Jerry, Justin, Scott's in there. This is your seventh season with the Mariners.
Yep.
You started as an intern, and now you have worked your way up all the way to the director of data. Do you say data or data?
I go data.
Okay. Director of data strategy. That's what I'm going to say too. I'm going to go data. First of all, I would love to hear the brief version of you as a Mariner, because you are, man, you're all in. Like, you are a Mariner.
Yep. Well, you know, starts at age 3. We'll skip past most of that, but I've been a Mariner fan my whole life. So, that, you know, I've got a lot of good pictures of me at touring Safeco Field and stuff as a 6-year-old. But as a Mariners employee, I think there's kind of 3 phases of stuff I've done. First, I started in kind of the more R&D type space, doing coding projects, analytics, data science, you know, whatever you want to call it. Then I was traveling with the team and helping out the team getting prepared for their upcoming series. So we call that advance scouting. Advance without the D, just advance. It's a fact for you.
That's a good fun fact.
That's an actual
We misspell that all the time on our own, you know, on our own internal stuff. So I just want to get that out there. It's advance, just advanced scouting. It's in advance of the series. That's why it's called that. So, you know, that's making new reports, getting us, you know, prepped. All the stuff that you see players or coaches reference during the game, you know, kind of comes through us. So, right, so all the cards, the wristbands, the iPad, the, you know, the spreadsheets, whatever it is. Like, that's, you know, everybody needs help, needs references and resources. So we're helping make those and traveling and then doing a replay. That was sort of my travel time. Since then, I've been kind of still in the advanced type world, but a little more advisory, a little more kind of helping us have good structures, less about watching tape, looking for tips on the next pitcher, that sort of thing. So I've been doing that now, oversee our advanced process, oversee our video operation, try to help out with staff education elements, kind of big leagues and affiliate, just trying to get everybody, you know, some staff development and understanding kind of what modern baseball is like, what good strategy looks like.
So a pretty small job.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Overall. Pretty minute. Scott, at first, I want to thank you for being here. I have a little egg timer here. Every time sand runs out, I'm going to drop that on him.
It's a pleasure.
What does your offseason look like?
Right. So, mostly what we're doing in the offseason is upgrading the materials and the reports that we're going to give our coaches and players during the season. So we're always trying to turn the dial on how can we, one, improve the quality of the information that's going to them in terms of, you know, our models and the data that we're taking in, but also equally or more importantly, the way that we're delivering it. Can we be giving it to these people in really good, actionable nuggets, we usually call them, that can actually make it into the game? So a lot of it is kind of pretty gross, like, database type work, and some of it is kind of more fun, like designing what things look like on the page. So some of that's been, you know, kind of working with Brownie, you know, our new offensive coordinator, I think he's going by.
Yes.
And so, you know, he's got sort of reports that he's looking for. We can kind of mix and match them with the stuff we're already doing, and just try to turn the dial and just try to make sure the structure of what we're doing once we're in season is the best we can make it.
We're talking with Scott Shibuyama. He's the Mariners' director of data strategy. Okay, you brought up Brant Brown, bench coach, offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball is so different than, like, let's take the NFL. Like, if your team hires the best defensive coordinator actual offensive coordinator, like, people know who that person is, and there's great hope and buzz around that hire. In baseball, I mean, outside of just, like, a a couple of either hitting or pitching coaches that maybe are known better than others. Like, the Mariners hire this guy named Brant Brown, and people are like, oh, okay, thanks for the press release. Let's sign a free agent.
totally. Yeah.
Right? But Brownie has this incredible background as a player and a coach, and has coached some of the game's best hitters. He brings just a wonderfully creative mind to the Mariners. What have been your early interactions working alongside Brant Brown?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've been working together kind of throughout the offseason, kind of talking about materials and that sort of stuff. But it's been really nice in spring to see him sort of in his element working with players. I think really what sets Brant apart in my eyes is, one, just the commitment level is super high. He's a grinder. He's super dedicated. And two, he's a simplifier and trying to get our players to go up to the plate with a singular approach, something that they are committed to, that they're willing to win and lose with, as opposed to, you know, kind of being more halfway. So I think those are two calling cards that I've seen from him that I really appreciate. And I think, you know, could be really successful for us.
How much of your work during the season surrounds the Mariners bullpen?
Quite a bit of it on a day-to-day level. That's usually what I'm thinking about the most on a given day is what our bullpen is going to look like that night. And, you know, preparing for the meeting that we're going to have, preparing for the meeting before the meeting after the meeting. You know, all of our coaches are so good at what they do and so busy and occupied during the day that I try to make sure that I am in a space where I can be a good resource, where I've thought about it for 2 or 3 hours already when we come into it, and they have questions and I can answer them and we go back and forth. So that's something where I feel like I have the luxury of having a little more time in my schedule because I'm not going to watch sides and fixing mechanics and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's like my primary, you know, in-game focus during the season.
When you think about this bullpen coming into the season, now, hopefully the Mariners get Brash and Santos back in the near future, but how are you thinking about the current pen going into the season? And when you're thinking about those mechanics of the sixth inning, seventh inning, and trying to get the ball late in the game to Munoz, for example.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, we were sort of coming into this spring thinking that maybe the bullpen plan would be a little different than years past, where we had more solidified roles. Because I think when you go back and look at our opening day bullpen, you know, each of the last infinity years, it really never looks like that at the end of the season. And so I think that's going to be as true this year as it has been in the past, just given, you know, Brash and Santos being down to start the year. So I think it provides certainly an opportunity because we will be leaning on guys that we haven't in the past. And so I think it'll be a great opportunity to show their stuff, you know, in leverage, because that's just a necessity for us. So I think, you know, obviously, we're looking forward to getting both those two guys back, but also I think it's exciting from a creativity standpoint. It's exciting from an opportunity standpoint. We're going to find out what we have and try to put our guys in the best positions we can to succeed.
We're talking with Scott Oshibayama. He's the Mariners' Director of Data Strategy. When you are preparing for a bullpen meeting with Scott and like double-digit members of the Mariners organization, are you focusing on availability, matchups, certain pitch types against certain type of swings? Like break it down in a little nitty-gritty for us, because it's more than just, he has pitched 2 days in a row, so I would suggest, Scott, I'm not throwing him today.
Indubitably, yeah.
Whose impression is that? Who are we doing there? Is that just a random generic nerd?
I think that's Jesse Smith.
Okay.
That's Jesse Smith. Okay.
I was going to say, it sounds just like him. I mean, all of the above. I think the first thing, you know, sort of the first piece of information that's so important, I think, to come into a day is the context within the season. I think one thing that's really important that is easy to forget is where you're at in the schedule in terms of rest and off days. So we're going to approach a game with an off day the next day much different than we will if we've got, you know, a full road trip coming up, just in how aggressive we can be with our best arm. So that's going to be where it's going to anchor with. We're going to start with game context. Then we're going to look at, availability. We try not to bucket our pitchers into high leverage, low leverage, anything like that. We're just going to approach each day fresh and depending on who's available that day. So somebody might be our high leverage, you know, pitcher in that specific situation. That's not his season-wide label. It's just that's how, you know, we're coming into that day with. And then from there, so then we're going to get into, you know, based on availability, based on where we're at in the season, where we're at in the schedule, trying to identify kind of some of our basic principles for that game. Who is likely to come in traffic, you know, if it's a close game? How are we going to try to manage an end game in a close game? How are we going to manage it in a down game? And a lot of this is based off of, you know, specific matchup projections that, you know, take into account hitter strengths, pitcher strengths, tries to put together, you know, a complete picture there. And, of course, mixing in a lot of more subjective piece of information, too. Who is feeling well in a subjective way? You know, who is throwing certain pitches well in a subjective way? And all of that, trying to you know, combine that all together into one comprehensive, and like Brownie would do, one comprehensive action plan that we can really feel confident in going into the game.
And as much as you're willing to share, like, I know when you talk about specific matchups, those go well beyond, oh, he's left-handed, pitcher's left-handed, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think it's all about, you know, trying to really think about and simulate in a way what an at bat is going to look like between a hitter and a pitcher. You know, what are the actual pitch types that are likely to be thrown? What are the swing decisions likely to be made? What is contact most likely to look like against those particular pitches that are thrown? And then kind of coming back together and putting that into a more singular recommendation.
Scott Servais has referenced on the record, I'm going to tell you this right now so you feel comfortable.
Okay.
Scott has referenced on the record the Moose number.
Mm-hmm.
Without getting into the exact ingredients of the recipe, can you give us context of what the Moose number is and how it's used?
Yeah. I think it's really everything I just mentioned, which is going back, you know, looking at a pitcher's history, looking at a batter's history, looking at similar players to them in sort of advanced ways, advanced with a D.
Yes.
And trying to figure out what is actually likely to occur in this plate appearance beyond just the statics of what have they done against players of that hand. You know, depending on how much sample each player has, you're going to be looking more or less at similar players to them. Looking at actual specific pitch types and trying to get to a very fine grain level of detail.
Does it take a Yale degree to come up with the name Moose Number?
I gotta say, it preceded me, but I think it's a great number.
It's a great name.
It's a great name.
I think it's like a, what we, you know, what's called a backronym. I don't think it actually stood for something, but I think you could go, you know, you could, we could make it stand for something. You know, matchup optimized, something. Yeah.
Yes, I understand. When you think about the 2024 Mariners, what excites you the most?
I think the depth of the lineup excites me the most. I mean, obviously, any good analyst does not want to read too much into spring training ever, but I feel like subjectively, and I think, you know, the numbers would bear this out, the quality of our bats are really good right now. And I think in terms of, true lineup depth, that's very exciting to me. It feels like we have a real chance to rip off a crooked number in any given inning right now, and that's just very exciting. I love a lot of the approaches we're putting together. I think we're going to be a really tough, you know, tough task for a starter, I think, when you look up and down the lineup.
You did not win the three-point contest. I thought that was surprising.
Yeah, I don't want to be an excuse guy. I did actually have a schedule conflict, so I wasn't able to finish.
Well, I don't want to be an excuse guy,
I know.
But here's an excuse.
Those are just the facts.
But hi, my name is Skyler.
Yeah. Would I have won? Probably not.
Hey,
Casey Lawrence was awesome, by the way.
How about
he was great?
Like, real talk.
Yeah,
I know you lost out in the ping pong tournament
yes.
to Luis Torrens.
Yes.
How about LT winning the Yankees ping pong tournament?
Yeah, you know, everybody was sending me, you know, the tweets and stuff of that. I was surprised 0%. He's that good.
Is he just amazing?
He is that good. Yeah. Yeah. I was, you know, I think we had a 3-game, you know, series, and I think he probably beat me 11-9, 11-7. That was a miracle to get as many points as I did. Because we played some just for fun, and he was smoking me 11-1, 11-2. You know, so he's really good.
I mean, every team's going to hit the waiver wire to get LT each winter.
I would take him against anybody in the league. I really would.
Wow, what's so good about his game? Just fast hands?
Everything. It starts with the serve. Always does. Very consistent, very low, very spinny. And then he just doesn't make mistakes. He gets strike one, puts the guys away.
I mean, you know, it's dominates the zone,
it
baby.
It is. He dominates the zone.
It's the 0-0 counts.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think you should feel better that he won. Was it Rizzo? Did he take down Rizzo?
I think it was Rizzo, yeah.
I mean, he's amazing.
Hey, now that we're talking about intramural sports, Have you bowled with Mookie Betts this spring?
We haven't. You know, I was kind of waiting. Like we said, my schedule is really busy, so. Well,
thank you, you for being here.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. We didn't get to the lanes this year, so.
By the way, I like that he's like, we're talking about Mookie Betts. Yeah. He's like, my schedule is pretty busy.
You know, he kept texting me, and I was like, I don't know if I have time. Yeah. Yeah.
Turn notifications off. Gosh, okay.
Didn't happen. Yeah, no. We had a great, huge staff outing like we usually do. That was awesome. My team did not win this year, but there were some great performances. Sean O'Malley was a standout this year.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Big showtime. I think he threw like a 235 in one of the games. Whoa. Something like that. It was really good.
Now you've bowled a 300, right?
I've not bowled a 300.
Oh, you haven't?
Sore subject. Yeah. 296.
Oh, yeah. So close.
Not good. Not good.
And now you're unconventional.
I'm unconventional. I bowl two-handed. Yeah.
What?
It's two-hand
spin?
Two-hand spin. I think it's called a spinaruski.
I think that's the technical
term. Yes. I think that is it.
Very technical.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the new thing. It's, you know, spin rates are big in bowling too. So
you self-taught YouTube? What are we doing here?
You know, that always felt more comfortable for me to get the right, you know, spin axis. But it's a common thing amongst like top players. Like Jason Belmonte is probably the best bowler.
Oh, my favorite
of all time. Close friend of Mookie's, by the way.
Of course.
And yeah, he's a two-hander. You know, he's very famous for that, and he's not the only guy on the tour that does that. So it's becoming more popular.
Spin access, something that I hear at bowling alleys all the time.
Yeah. Yes.
In my advance work, I have noticed that is a big thing.
Right before spring training, I set my personal best.
Gary crushed it.
Yeah, I went with Finley and Baker. We went bowling.
Uh-huh.
200.
Oh,
I
yes.
I 200. I got my first turkey ever.
Yes.
Which is pretty thrilled about. I don't use spin, though. That's my
problem. Maybe spin.
I just straight.
Well, so what's your highest score without bumpers, though?
Ah, yes! There it is. Four,
yes. Skyler, this has been wonderful, man. We just think so highly of you and your work, and you're so gracious with your time, and we always learn so much about bowling and other things also.
So. You never know what you're going to get here.
Yeah.
So thanks for having me, guys.
There was Skyler Shibuyama, brought to you by Jack's Grill, two locations, Issaquah and West Seattle. Known for the greatest steaks in your neighborhood, for a great dining experience, a friendly family atmosphere at a friendly price, make plans to stop by Jack's Grill. Well, one of the real standouts for the Mariners so far this season has been Bryce Miller. He has been excellent so far this year. He'll take another turn in Texas coming up. When we return, we're going to detail what has made Bryce Miller so good this year. We'll do that when we return right after this.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
It's been a great start to the season for Bryce Miller. He has been excellent in the Mariners' rotation so far as we detail what has worked so well for the Mariners starter.
Here comes Miller's 3-2. Strike three called. He froze him. A slider. Buckled his knees. Down goes De La Cruz. Miller gets the punch out. What a night it's been for Bryce Miller. He's gone through six innings. One hit. One run allowed. He has been dynamite. We go to the bottom of the inning. Mariners with the lead 7-1.
His season ERA under 2. In fact, in his last three starts, he's only allowed one earned run.
3-2 pitch. One more time here to Bush. Here it comes. Swing and a miss. Struck him out with a sinker. Fourth strikeout. That is five consecutive retired.
And after an impressive rookie season last year with the Mariners, Miller went into the offseason with a clear goal. Last year, a big gap in the splits between facing lefties and facing righties.
It was pretty obvious the splits between righties and lefties against me were huge. I believe last year righties hit like 199 or 200 against me, and lefties hit 299 or 300. So it was a 100-point swing. And kind of reflecting on my arsenal, like at the end of the season last year, I had five pitches that I was throwing to righties. And then when a lefty would come up, we kind of were down to just two because we kind of got away from the sweeper against lefties. We got away from the changeup because I was dropping my slot and I didn't throw the two seam against him either because it doesn't really play as well. Then I'm down to a fastball on the gyro slider. And when I'm 70% heater, it's pretty easy guessing game there. So going into this offseason, like my main focus was to find something to get lefties out, find something to be more effective against lefties so that they can't just load up seven lefties in a lineup and, you know, put me at a disadvantage. So I had seen the last year, like over the last year, the success that Logan and Kirby had had with the splitter. And with where my changeup was, I felt like the splitter would be a good addition for me. It's always, with how I throw, it's really hard for me to get inside and really pronate a changeup. Whereas the splitter, I'm able to just stay behind it and throw it like a heater. And it's something that I'm not going to have to drop my slot. I can throw it from the four seam fastball slot, and hopefully the bottom falls out and they swing over it.
And so far, so good for this year. When you look at his splits from last year, take righties, first of all. Last year, righties batted 200 against him. This year, it's 205, nearly identical. Last year, the on-base percentage for righties, 234. This year, 244. Again, nearly identical. Last year, they slugged 315 against him. This year, it's 308. So the righty splits have been nearly identical, and Bryce Miller really handled righties well last year. Now, the big difference, the lefty splits. Last year, lefties batted 303 against Bryce Miller. This year, it's 109. Last year, 358 on base percentage. This year, 196. And last year, lefties slugged 558 against him. This year, 261. A huge gap between lefty splits last year and lefty splits this year.
When you are preparing as an opposing team and you're getting ready for your game against the Mariners to face Bryce Miller, you know, the 2023 version of Bryce, you know the out pitch is the heater. You know, hey, when this guy gets ahead, he's going to elevate his heater. Look for the elevated heater and eliminate the one over the top of the zone. And now you've got him back into, you know, his secondary pitches over the plate are going to be less impactful than that fastball. What that splitter does, it creates something new in their mind. He's thrown it to the righties and the lefties. It makes his slider better by virtue of the fact that now they can't just eliminate pitches, you know. And now he's been able to, I think his slider too has improved. And, you know, he's locating his slider better. It's been more effective in the strike zone because the splitter exists. And when it's not because they look like the same pitch. It's because you have in your mind now as a hitter, you've not been able to eliminate pitches. And he's shown the ability to throw it for a strike, which is not an easy thing to do. I think it's really made him a different pitcher in the early going. He certainly looks like a more dangerous seven-inning model than maybe he would have been last year. Last year, Bryce was more often than not going to be a five and change guy. And as soon as they got to the point where they ran a pitch count or, you know, the third time through the order, when they were able to identify, all right, lay off the high heater. Now there's another thing, and as a result of the split, you know, now the high heater the third time through the lineup is just as effective as it was the third time, because they're not, you know, they're not dialed in on one strength. They have to think about the others.
That's Jerry DePoto. So peeling back the layers even further against lefties this year, the split finger, of course, has been the center of attention against lefties, and it's been dynamite. Lefties batting 071 against the splitter with an 071 slug. There's been just one hit from a lefty off his splitter, and it was a single. So that's been great. The sweeper has been really good against lefties as well. No hits against the sweeper.
Last year, I threw a sweeper, a pitch that I called a sweeper, and it was still pretty depthy, but I didn't throw it much. It was a 0-0 steal a strike pitch, and that was it. It was almost an auto take every time. And this year, the adjustment with that pitch is, only thing I'm thinking with that is throw it as hard as I can from the fastball spot, and it's going to be more of like more slurvy. Mm. It's going to be more depthy, kind of similar, I'm hoping, to a right-handed version of Cole Reagan's curveball, where it's a pretty horizontal curveball, but it's going to look more like a heater, and I think it's going to play a lot better. Last year, that pitch was like 79, 80, and I'm hoping if it can be 83, 84 in the game this year from the same slot. That was the thing. You know, last year, the changeup and the sweeper, I was 6 inches lower than my heater. Trying to get everything coming out of the same slot, throwing everything like a heater. And I think it's gonna allow me to throw all my pitches in all counts to righties and lefties.
And there's been a big improvement of the four seamer against lefties. They're batting 167 against it this year. It was 329 last year.
The four seam, how well it plays off of everything else whenever the hitters aren't only sitting fastball. Because the back half of last season, I was 60-70% fastball. And ideally this year, if I'm 50% fastball, the heater's going to play even better and everything else is going to play better as well. So it's, like I said, just trying to change usages a little bit and make everything look more like a heater with the split.
In his last three starts, 19 and a third innings, one earned run allowed, 18 strikeouts, five walks. The only run was a solo home run. That has been it. His last three starts, he is in a groove.
But his ability to land off-speed pitches early in counts, when he struggled to do that at times last year, he's just grown so much as a pitcher, and his ability to have a feel for where he's at in the game.
That's Mariners manager Scott Servais. And the next time we see Bryce Miller on the mound, he'll be taking on the high-powered offense of the Texas Rangers. That will be a great matchup in Arlington.
Now, I can't wait to see what Bryce Miller does against the Texas Rangers coming up. Coming back, we're going to wrap things up here in Trident Talk as we get you ready for the pregame show. The Mariners and Rockies coming your way right after this.